Breakfast with Pat and Heels for Imar Insurance. Get an online quote and instant cover anywhere, anytime. Visit imar.com.au.
Timmy's introducing a little bit of levity into the program this
good
morning.
Work, Timmy.
Yes, like Bradman, I got dropped at the Ecker Ground. Then Dad told me to get the train home.
2,900 is less than Bradman.
Brighton Homes open line on 13 13 55. Don't forget, Brighton Homes include aircon, flooring, steel frames, and solar as standard now. Discover today why it's better with Brighton, or you can, as Timmy has just done, join us on the Love Family Lawyers text line. Love is all you need. 0467 736 736. That's 0467 SENSEN. Now, I mentioned Grantley yesterday and thought, well, wouldn't it be a good idea to get him on the show?
Yeah.
Not only is he a wonderful sports writer, but he's a magnificent author, prolific, writes so many books. But he's one of our leading authorities on all things boxing. Worked with the Fenwick camp for a long time and all that sort of thing. And he knows. So we were just saying, and we certainly weren't running the ferocious down when he said, this is the greatest performance in the history of Australian boxing. But one who can tell us where it does rate in Australian boxing is Grantley Keyes. And Grantley, a very good morning to you. Thanks for giving us time today, mate. Grantley?
He's given us nothing so far, Paddy.
Grantley, you there, mate?
Yeah, how are you, buddy?
Good, mate. After that big build-up, we finally got you. Hey, congratulations on a wonderful career. I mean, just how many books have you racked up so far?
Oh, well, it's up to 18 now. Turning them out and enjoying it, I must say, because I love learning about Australian history while I'm writing it. So that's fantastic. We've got a new one about Henry Lawson out, which is just a great insight into the way that Australia was in the late 19th century. I found it fascinating.
Yeah. Have you always been historical, Grantley? You had that interest, or has that grown as you've matured?
Oh, well, I guess part of the interest in history started with boxing history, I suppose, because I was a very heavily involved in boxing for a long time, and I love the history of it also, going right back to when Jack Johnson came out here to fight Tommy Burns in 1908 at Sydney Stadium, the great historic fight, the first time a black man won the world heavyweight title. So that sort of intrigue and the way that people lived their lives in those days really just fascinated me and made the rich history and tradition of boxing more alive for me as it was in the present sense when I was involved with Jeff Fenwick and all those great champions in the 80s and 90s.
You've got to be an incredibly patient man just to research this stuff, mate, and finding people to talk to who know and still remember.
That's right, yeah. I wrote a book a few years ago about General John Monash, the Australian World War I commander from Melbourne, and I managed to meet and interview his great-grandson. It was almost like looking at Monash himself. They have very, very similar appearance. One's, of course, 100 years further on than John Monash, but it was fascinating and intriguing to chat to him. And when I wrote my book about Banjo Patterson, I interviewed his great-grandson. His name's Alistair Campbell, and it's Banjo Patterson's great-grandson, but he lives on Henry Lawson Way in the town of Young in New South Wales, which is a bit ironic.
You know your Henry Lawson book, the tag, I didn't know that was your newest one, but the tag of a meteoric rise and a quick fall, is that Lawson or was it society at the time?
Well, it's Lawson because he was painted as one of the world's great writers. He went over to England and the publishers who were translating people like Joseph Conrad and Leo Tolstoy into English, they thought that Lawson was on a par with those guys, with Maxim Gorky. But unfortunately, his drinking and his marital problems combined to really devastate his life, and what might have been fizzled out. In the end, Lawson was cadging for drinks on the streets. He was so broke and ended up in jail because he couldn't pay maintenance payments. He spent a total of nearly 6 months in prison, locked up beside murderers, all because he had no money to pay his wife and children's maintenance bills. It was very, very, very tragic. And one of the times he came out of jail, and people said he was virtually looking like a skeleton because it seemed as though his bones were rattling. But his eye for detail and his studies of the Australian people, I don't think has ever been matched, from that period in time. things like the drover's wife writing about these hard living, sad women in the outback whose husbands are away driving for months and they're left with their little children to care for them against all of life's obstacles. And in this case, a giant black snake that crawls into the house and they can't find it. It's a thrilling story and a harrowing story, but a story of the bushwoman's love for her children and theirs in turn for her. It's really, really beautiful stuff.
Yeah, and another one of your books, Joseph Banks. I've read somewhere that he wasn't the nicest of blokes.
Well, it depends on your perspective. I mean, history would judge him as one of the great scientists of all time, a man who really did so much to advance the cause of the knowledge of nature and the environment because of his bravery. He was a young guy, very, very wealthy guy, a real pants man. He was a very rich playboy in Britain. But rather than just live a divorced life like a lot of his young, rich friends were doing, Banks funded an expedition on a boat called the Endeavour with Lieutenant James Cook at the command. And they were always loggerheads for a long time, Cook and Banks, over who was really leading the voyage. But it was because of Banks that much of the Southern Hemisphere was mapped and charted at that time. The things that he did were extraordinary, and the bravery that these guys took on. I mean, they had 12 Marines with them in a small boat. They would turn up at places and hundreds of Maoris would come flying over the hill doing the haka at them. They were incredibly brave people. And Banks took back something like 30,000 botanical samples from New Zealand, Australia, and from a lot of the South Seas, you know, things that people had never seen before. He took back kangaroo skins and people were astounded what these things were. And, you know, tales of these mythical creatures in the South that looked like deer but hopped about like big rabbits. It really, really stunned people. So, and it was because of Banks that scientists really advanced much of their knowledge of the natural world.
No, you've changed my perspective, mate. Not a lot wrong there.
Hey, where do you find time for your boxing these days?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you just have to make time. You know, they're two great passions, I suppose, Australian history and boxing. And boxing is one of those sports, like it's a brutal sport, and I think it can be a very dangerous sport. And throughout my writing about boxing, I was always keen not to encourage people to take it up competitively, you know, unless they really, really want it, because it is a dangerous sport. We saw that fight on the weekend, Kambosos getting over the top of Lopez. You know, a lot of physical damage done to both guys. As thrilling and exciting as it was, and what a great victory it was for George Kambosos. Yeah, you can also get pretty badly hurt in boxing as well.
Now, well, one of the reasons for having a chat, and, you know, we haven't had you on, which was a complete oversight on our behalf, but, you know, ferocious finishes and obviously the heat of the moment, one of the greatest performances in the history of Australian boxing. And I thought, well, if anyone can tell us where it does rank, you know, you would have an opinion on it. And I'd just like to know, you've seen the Fenix and the Famichons and the Roses and the Kostjas. Well, you know, where do you put it?
Well, it's got to be right up there. I mean, I was lucky to be ringside, like a lot of people in Brisbane, to see Jeff Horn beat Manny Pacquiao. But this was an extraordinary performance. This was a guy who wasn't given a chance by just about anybody, and a lot of people in the press wrote him off and ignored him. But Kambosos has been on the scene, flying under the radar for a long time. He went over there to New York City, Madison Square Garden, the home of the traditional home of boxing. He took on a guy who was undefeated, who was just coming off a victory over a guy called Vasily Lamachenko, who everybody thought was the greatest, you know, shaping up to be the greatest fighter, not of just now, but of ever. And Kambosos took him apart, dropped him in the first round, pressured him throughout the fight, and won. I think it's got to be right up there. It's hard to go past. I mean, these sorts of things are very subjective.
Yeah.
It's hard to go past Lionel Rose beating Harada as Australia's greatest ever performance, because Lionel Rose grew up in a bark humpy, eating possum until he was about 14 or 15 in quite a remote Aboriginal camp. At the age of 19, he takes his first overseas trip on an aeroplane, goes to Tokyo, Japan. It's only 20 years after the end of World War II, takes on a guy who'd been the world flyweight and the world bantamweight champion before a Japanese audience who aren't going to do Lionel Rose any favours. And Lionel, from the opening bell, charged at Harada and gave him a boxing lesson for 15 rounds. I think, you know, it's going to be very hard to top that as Australia's greatest ever performance. Then you had about 15 years before that, Jimmy Carruthers goes over to Johannesburg at Rand Stadium, a packed Rand Stadium full of South Africans, and he fights a guy called Vic Towiel. Comes out in the first round. Carruthers throws 147 punches, just overwhelms Vic Towiel. Towiel throws one punch, which misses, and Jimmy Carruthers just bangs him and batters him for the whole first round to win by a first-round knockout over a guy who'd been the world bantamweight champion for a long time. That's got to be a phenomenal performance as well. And then you had one that I was personally ringside for in Atlantic City, New Jersey. It was promoted by a big, shifty real estate entrepreneur named Donald Trump.
Right.
It was 1989 at the Convention Center in Atlantic City. Jeff Harding, both eyes closing, his nose smashed across his face, drags himself up from the campus. He's a mile behind on points, comes home like Winks, winning a big race, and just absolutely overwhelms Dennis Andres in the last round for a last round knockout when he was behind on points to win the world light heavyweight title. That was a pretty incredible performance too. But when you're dealing with Kambosos, you're dealing with a guy who fought a bloke that was right at the top of his game and was coming off a huge victory for all the world lightweight titles. A pretty incredible performance.
Yeah, and Grantley, on the night, how did Lopez go? How did he feel to you? Was he on his game? Sometimes, you know, when there are some boilovers, that they are off. But Lopez didn't appear to be off to me.
Well, I think if anything, Lopez may have underestimated Kambosos. I mean, Kambosos has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. He's a wholehearted fighter, but he's not short on a rap for himself. He's talking now about statues being made for him and all that sort of stuff. We'll wait to see. But as I say, it was a great performance. Lopez, I think, may have underestimated Kambosos to some degree because he was such a big underdog. And I don't think he factored in the fact that Kambosos had literally sparred hundreds of rounds with Manny Pacquiao. He was Manny Pacquiao's main sparring partner for a long time, including before the fight with Jeff Horn. He was over in Manila sparring with Pacquiao all the time. So he picked up a lot of stuff from Pacquiao, a lot of slick moves. And I don't think Kambosos realised just how fast Kambosos was and just what a clever, evasive boxer he could be too. So I think he obviously got a big shock, Lopez, and he paid the price. If they fight again, though, I'd still be backing Kambosos because at the end of the fight, Lopez looked like he honestly needed a face transplant. Yeah, he was a mess.
Let's hope they stays true to the word, comes out here and we find a venue that we can cram 70,000 or 80,000 in and put it in. Wouldn't it be great?
Tremendous.
One of our listeners, Murs, said, what about Madigan v. Clay?
Yeah, well, Madigan didn't win, so. They actually fought twice. They fought at the Rome Olympics and also the Chicago Golden Gloves in 1959, and Cassius Clay won both times. Madigan, I interviewed him several times. He was a lovely, quiet man. Lovely, quiet man. He said, he was at the time about 30. Clay was 18 or 19, and he said he still didn't have the... It seemed as though he didn't have the experience to cope with Cassius Clay's boxing skills, even though he was 30 years old and had fought around the world for many, many years.
Grantley, I've got to get your opinion on our local boy, Justice Herney, who missed Tokyo, of course, with this hand injury, but is back.
Yep.
He's got a press conference today. We pretty much know where he's headed, but he's just going to confirm what he's doing now over the next few months. What are your thoughts about his future in the game?
Oh, he's a great boxer. He's very, very talented. It's a shame he missed out on the Olympics because he probably would have won a medal. He'd come third in the world amateur title, so he probably would have won at least a bronze medal. He's got a big fight coming up with Joe Goodall, who was Jeff Horn's training partner for a long time. Big Bad Joe. It's marvelous in the fight game. So many of these guys are just absolute gentlemen, and Joe Goodall and Justice Herney are a real credit to the sport. I think it's going to be a tremendous fight coming up. Herney's they've sparred a lot of rounds together some while ago. But Joe Goodall's endeavouring to take his career to another level. He's been based in Las Vegas for the last few months, training with Joseph Parker's trainer, and that's going to be very, very interesting to see what improvement Joe's made and whether he can turn back the career of Justice Herney, who's coming off that big win over Paul Gallen. You know, that was even though Paul Gallen isn't at the level of those guys, he's still a very, very big name in the sport. And it gave Justice Herney a lot of publicity and a lot of attention.
Yeah, Granley, just to sort of finish up, one of the boxers who had a good impact in my youth and in growing up was Jeff Fenwick. What's your wrap-up of Jeff?
Well, I was in Jeff's corner for all his world title wins, so I would be pretty biased with that, but I think he was just an absolutely phenomenal fighting machine. The things that he achieved, you know, Johnny Lewis, his trainer, always says no one will ever be able to do that. Jeff came along. He only had 28 amateur fights, I think, but he fought at the Olympics and won a medal at the World Cup. So even with that limited background, he was one of the world's top amateur boxers. And then within seven fights, he was a world champion. Within about 15 fights, he was a three-time world champion. And if fate had not conspired against him, he would have beaten Azuma Nelson and become one of the few guys in the world ever to have four world championships, and he would have been undefeated at the time. So the things that he achieved in his career are just absolutely phenomenal. I think he's just a great natural athlete and proof that if you have enormous self-belief, as George Kambosos showed the other day, if you have enormous self-belief, it goes a long way to driving you to success in whatever field that you take on.
It's fascinating to chat to you. Hey, you better give this the latest of your books a plug for Christmas on Henry Lawson. What's it called?
It's called Lawson, yeah. Yep. by me. And, you know, if George Kambosos is the world lightweight champion, Henry Lawson was the heavyweight champion of Australian writers. I think he wrote with more honesty and clarity about Australia and its people than anyone before him. I wrote a book about Banjo, but Banjo saw Australia through rose-coloured glasses. His heroes are all these great he-men like the man from Snowy River. But Banjo wrote about just how tough life was in the Australian bush and in the slums in the city. So, yeah, I hope people enjoy it.
We will. I love your writing. I've been a fan for years, and it's always great to spend time in your company as well. And thank you for giving us your time this morning, Grantley. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, guys. Anytime, really. Thank you very much for having me.
Grantley Keyser, a boxing journalist, boxing historian, and just a wonderful author.
So you know when you said historian, when he said he was in Jeff's corner, what did he do?
He was one of their corner men.
Yeah, like actually right in there.
Yeah, he was one of his corner men.
What, put the chair out?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Vodafone Brisbane.
Get the spittoon out there? Get the spittoon out while the cut man's going?
The Vodafone Brisbane Test Heel starts December 8th at the Gabba. Seats are selling fast. Well, day one, I think, damn near a sellout. So, yeah, they really are going fast. So search Ashes Tickets because these are the hottest tickets in town. We need a break. Be back with more in a moment.